today on You're Buying a Home with Silas Lindenstein. We're talking about 10 myths that keep you from buying a home. Hello, everybody, and welcome to You're Buying a Home with Silas Lindenstein. I am your host, Silas Lindenstein. Welcome to episode number 34, 10 myths keeping you from buying a home. Yes, that's the name of the episode. You know what's funny? I did a video about this of five. Actually, I used my daughter in it. It's really cute. It's on my website, SilasGetsReal.com. You can check that out. But I kind of totally forgot that I didn't do this episode as a podcast. I had just done that before I even started a podcast. I did this. So I wanted to run down those myths. Now, if this is your first time tuning in, let me introduce myself. My name is Silas Lindenstein. I am a real estate agent with Boutique Brokerage out here in Seattle, Washington. But if you are not from Seattle, that's okay. This podcast is still for you. This podcast is all about educating and empowering home buyers all over the nation. What we've discovered is buying a house is buying a house. We use some different terms in Seattle. We might have a slight change of order on a couple things, but your local real estate professional can help straighten that out with you. But in the end, buying a house is buying a house, and everything you learn here will help you and educate you and empower you. So when you go out there to buy a house, you understand at least the very basics. And if you just want the step-by-step guide in buying a home, the first 10 episodes of this podcast are that. You can just go back, start from the beginning. First 10 episodes, I break it down the step-by-step how to buy a home. It's about 10 parts, kind of 9, because the first one's an intro. But yeah, it's just 10 steps. It breaks it down. And furthermore, if you actually want that in paper form, sort of digital paper, I do have an ebook, a guidebook. It's the ultimate guide for buying a home, the You're Buying a Home podcast book, right? The ebook. I can send that to you. I'll email it to you. If you just email me at Silas, S-I-L-A-S, at SilasGetsReal.com. Email me. Tell me you'd like the ebook. Tell me what city you're from. I'm trying to keep track of this and learn. And I'll send that out to you. All right? It's a deal. It's free. Not charging you. Just one of the things I do for you wonderful listeners who have made this. Really, this, do you know this podcast you're listening to has hit number 21 on Apple Podcasts in the how-to section? Like, it's incredible. It's not something I expected when we started a year and a half ago. But I'm getting emails all the time, people asking me questions about their home buying situation. They want the ebook. I also do get requests from people that are asking if I might know a real estate agent in your area. And that's another service I provide for free to you. If you need a real estate agent in the area you live in or that you're moving to, and go ahead and email me again at Silas@SilasGetsReal.com. Tell me where you're moving or where you live and where you want an agent. And I will, I have some directories. I have some contacts I've made all over the country. Partner agents that I can connect you via email, introduce you to, and you'll go off and have a wonderful time buying a home. And I trust these people, and I'm going to keep, you know, and I'm also going to follow up and making sure they're doing well for you, that you like them. So that makes sure I refer them to other people in the future, make sure they're doing a good job. So I believe they are. So yeah, email. And of course, if you're in the Seattle, Washington area, the general Pacific Northwest area here, I'd love to help you out. So I am currently taking clients. So don't worry. I've got emails before saying you're probably too busy. No, not for you. Not for my listeners. You are my number one fans. Okay. So I want to help you out. And lastly, I'm going to tell you about something I've not talked about much on this podcast. We've got an episode number 34 now. I was keeping it separate, but I feel some people ask me what else I do. I'll tell you this. Just in case you're interested, you don't have to, okay? But I host another podcast. It's called it's not a home buying podcast. It's a sort of a regular podcast. It's called Black and a Half. It's actually the longest running comedy podcast in Seattle. I co-host that with Samantha Rund, comedian and actress who lives out here in the Seattle area. We discuss hot topics, movies, TV shows, and we interview guests. Usually they're creators of some sort, whether they're filmmakers, musicians, actors, somewhere. Depends on the episode. Sometimes comedians. If that interests you, if that's the type of show you would like, go ahead and check it out. Go to blackandahalf.com and subscribe there via to your favorite podcasting source. Yeah, I just thought I should bring it up. And yeah, I do that one. But I do this one too. We're gonna focus on this one right now. You're buying a home with Silas Lindenstein. And today's episode, 10 myths that are keeping you from buying a home. I've discussed some of these topics on here. I've hit them at various points on different episodes, but here's just a good list of, this is going to be a good list of myths, especially if this, you happen to be your first episode or a reminder. That's what it is. It's like, if you're listening to these and you're still like, oh, you know what? I still don't know, because I still don't think I can buy a house because of this. And now I've busted it. I've busted it on you. And I remind you that's not true, that you can buy a home. Okay. So the 10 myths, and these aren't in any particular order, so I'm just going to go through them. All right. Number one, I need a huge down payment. No. That's myth number one. And we know that that's not true here, right? If you listen to the show, huge one, that's relative, right? Depends where you are. That depends on the loan. For one, you can, 3.5% is the FHA loan requirement. That's the minimum. You can do that one. 3.5%. You could do 5% conventional or 5% FHA. You can do 10%. You don't need 20% is this old way that they used to only buy house. But guess what? They even have down payment assistance programs that let you put nothing down. Zero down, like a no down payment. You may still have some closing costs, but we can even wrap those into the offer in some ways. I have sold homes to people that they have literally walked in. They went to signing, brought no money, just signed. That was it. So you don't need a lot of money. Now, I only recommend those low down payment ones or zero down if the mortgage payment works for you still and doesn't put you too high, because of course, zero down, the more money you put down, the less you're going to pay in interest, right? So you're going to get higher interest, which means higher monthly payments, the less you put down. So that's the disadvantage of those programs, like the zero down program, but they're still worth looking at, because in some areas, I have people that I have put into condos that they were living in apartments, and now their mortgage is cheaper than their rent was, right? Or the rent was about to go up. So it can be cheaper. It depends on your situation, right? Number two, my credit is really bad. I can't buy for a long time. Again, this is subjective. What is really bad credit? I had a friend who told me, oh, I have really bad credit, dude. It's only like 720. And I'm like, what are you talking about? It's like nearly perfect. He thought it was bad. Or I thought, oh, it's 680. You can buy a house for 680. You can buy a house for 550. This credit score, horrible interest rate. But like, yeah, there's this basic score, and I'm not a loan officer, but I would love to see people get to 650. At least maybe 640. I think you're in a much better situation, better loan packages that you can get, but you can even get them lower. And the thing is, you don't even know what your credit score is, by the way. You don't. You think you do, but you don't, because you got Credit Karma and you're like, oh no, I know. I check it every other day. Truth is, when you go get a loan from a mortgage, they weigh different. They weigh different things about you differently than like a credit card. Some places will look at your length of your debt. They'll look at that a little more. They'll weight that like 50% of your score. If you're going for a car, they weigh that different. All the different criteria, length, your debt to income ratio, your length of the credit, missed payments. They're very different. So I've seen it as drastically as almost 100 points. Difference between Credit Karma and what someone's mortgage credit came up as. Because even if you go and buy a, if you went and got a car, you're like, oh, I know my credit score, I just bought a car. They actually pull it different too. The Credit Karma is more matched to what you're going to look at from a credit card, the way they pull it. So you need to get that checked out. So go in and find out. Go to a loan officer, a lender, mortgage broker. Go have them run your credit to see what it actually is. And they can give you a timeline. And I talk about this a lot. When I went in to see my, I went to talk to a loan officer. We were thinking that we had, oh, we could probably buy a house in like 3 years if we, you know, get our credit right. Turns out it was 6 months away. They could tell. So things can be different. You need to check it out. Get over that fear. Get over that myth. Go get pre-approved or see if you can. Number three, mortgages are too high. Depends on your area. Depends on your area. Depends on a lot of things. Depends on interest rates. Depends on down payments. Yeah, they're higher than they used to be, but everything's higher than it used to be. There are still things you can get cheaper than where you're renting for a lot of you. I know you, one person's out there like, no, not me. I only pay $500 a month for a 6-bedroom house by the river. And I'm like, yeah, but your mom owns it, right? And she's out of the country. She doesn't even care. There's always exceptions, but generally mortgages are too high. Yeah. Like I'm in Seattle. I know high mortgages are high here. Yeah. And depending on your situation, renting can be, in some ways a seemingly more affordable option. But you find a way, you know, usually they're not going to qualify you. This isn't 2008 or 2007. They're not going to qualify you for something they think you can't afford. All right. Sometimes it's that we go through when we don't have a bill that's significant, we go through our money a lot quicker than we probably should. Probably not putting money away in your 401k or your IRAs, right? And everything's too high, but you've got large bills at Taco Bell or where you're going out to eat, right? Fancy places like Taco Bell. So, and it's relative. See where you qualify again. Number four, it's cheaper to rent than buy. Oh, this is such a tough one because it's so individual. It depends on what you want to live in. It depends on the city. There's tax benefits you get for being a homeowner. That you can't get as a renter there. So, I mean, tax deduction type things. And there are ways to make buying even cheaper. And they tend to stay lower. Your rent is usually going up. Mortgages only really go up if your property taxes go up and usually not as significant as it is for rentals. So, just because it is today doesn't mean it is tomorrow, you know? So you got to look into some things. Plus, you know, I tend to think about when you're renting, you spend the money and it's gone. When you are in a mortgage, every time I put a dollar into the principal amount, you know, after the interest, a little extra, that's a dollar I get in my equity. And so when I sell this down the road, my house, and move into a smaller one that, you know, for the size that we need. And, you know, it's a dollar. It's almost like another, it's extra dollar to my retirement to that pot of wealth that you hope to have at the end. So it's going towards something, right? So I count it as part of my savings. Number five, some of these sound the same. I can't afford a mortgage. You don't know that unless you go check out and get pre-approved. That is a myth to say I just can't afford it. Go find out. Number six. Now, here's an interesting one. I have too much student debt. Too much student debt. Okay. Here's the thing. Student debt alone doesn't stop you from getting the mortgage. It is about your monthly payment, not about what your overall debt. They don't care if you have $1 million in student debt. If they care if your loan or if the monthly mortgage minimum, whether it is $100 or $800, okay? That's what they care about. It's the month-to-month ratio. They don't care if you're in debt the rest of your life. And who knows what's happening with student debt and everything. But student debt alone, the sheer amount that you have is not as important as that monthly. You do want to figure it out and make sure you're on a plan, because if you're on a long repayment plan for that student loan where it increases as you are supposed to be getting older and making more money, you want to make sure that it's still going to work in a few years for you, right? Okay, number seven, home maintenance is expensive. Well, depends what you mean by maintenance, right? What's most of the mains people have is my sink's clogged. And I'll tell you this, home maintenance can be expensive if you call people out for every single thing. But you're going to learn real quick that there's a lot of things, the maintenance that you need on the house is you pay a plumber $400 when the only reason you're paying $400 is because they have a certain wrench that's expensive that they use to turn that one little nut, right? But you can find a lot of do-it-yourselfers, people doing videos on YouTube. That's what I do. I look for any problems that I need solved on YouTube, little projects. I learn from there, and then I learn to do it on my own. Obviously, I'm not going to replace like a roof by myself or that kind of thing, but yeah, and those can be expensive. But usually you end up paying for it when you're renting anyway, like in the end, like, you know, they raise the rent or it's included. They're planning on maintenance. So much of the rental should be, we'll have this much for maintenance costs to take care of the house. So you're not, someone else is paying it. You're just paying it. They just called it rent and wrapped it in. But I will say, there's days that I feel like home ownership's expensive, but you know, slowly, especially as you gather the tools, it becomes less over the years. The first week when you move in and you need a lawnmower and you need a weed whacker, and then you also need some pliers, and you need, it can feel like, man, I'm spending so much on this right now. But no, a lot of it's fine. If you paint your house on your own, it saves a ton of money. It's backbreaking work, or it'll stretch your patience. But I did it. Me and my wife did that around our house, painted our whole house this last summer. Saved us. Probably saved us $6,000-$7,000 doing it on our own. Worth it to me. Number eight, it's cheaper to buy a fixer-upper. Here's what I tell people. Okay, a normal house is $425 in the area, right? That's cheap in Seattle. But if it's, say, $425, so I just want to spend, let's go get this $300,000 one and we'll fix it up. I'm like, okay, that's fine, but you're going to spend $125,000 fixing it up to bring it to this other one that's fully made. It's never that. It's rarely that a fixer-upper is cheaper. It's just that when you're buying a newer home, it's just already been paid for. You know, like it's paid for you're either going to pay it up front in the cost of the house because they made it nicer, or you're going to pay in buying the stuff to do it. And then hopefully you find the time to actually do it and you, you know, get the money to do it, budget it out, and just get it done. Right. But I usually find that, like, yeah, it costs the same. It's whether you do it or someone else does it, and whether you want it when you move in already fixed. I'd say it's easier to buy a fixer-upper. It's easier. It's not cheaper. Number 9, don't settle for anything less than your dream home. Oh, look, it's not that I don't want you to be happy. It's not that I don't want you to have your dream home. I would love to sell you your dream home, but we have to be realistic, right? The average person owns 5 homes in their lifetime for whatever reason. And yet some of you might have just fallen over. Don't worry. Don't stress out. It's for different reasons. It's, you know, maybe you have your starter home and then one that you usually the first one you buy is something you buy that you can build some equity in, right? And then once you have some equity built in over some years, then you can buy a house that's really what you wanted. The sort of that closer to the dream house. And then you're going to need a downgrade again later, like when you're an empty nester, right? Or something. So that's 3 right there. And then you can imagine occasionally someone buys another place. They buy a condo to rent out or whatever. So the average person's about 5 different places in their lifetime. It's this idea that when the first house you're going to get, you're going to be in there forever. Maybe. But that's really uncommon. So I'm not saying buy something that's your nightmare, but it doesn't have to be your dream home. There's got to be compromise somewhere if you're going to be on a budget. And I really recommend that, just being tight on a budget. So I'm saying settle. Settle for something less than your dream home. You might be surprised how much you enjoy it. My dream home is probably like 1.5 million. That's these grand staircases as I go in. Didn't get those yet. Gotta work to that. I need a lot more. Need a lot more you to buy a house for that to happen for me. But yeah, just your first home, just be happy that you can get into something that's going to build equity. Don't say, is this my dream house? Don't ask that question. Ask the question, can I see myself here? That's all you want out of your first home. Can you see yourself there? Number 10, now is a bad time to buy. People tell you that because they think they understand the market and know where the market is going. Like, oh, it's pretty high in the market. Don't buy now. Just wait a couple years. I've heard people say that every year for the last, like, 10 years. The economy keeps growing and strengthening more each week. I know it depends. And it depends where you are. If there's, you expect a bunch of layoffs or something, that would seem where. If you're in a major city, I don't know if there's ever a time to not buy, right? Like, things usually go up. If I'm in a little tiny town, like in the middle of Kansas, maybe, you're like, oh, well, let's make sure the economy's straight here pretty well, and then we can go into 4. But don't think you can predict the market. You can't. You can't predict when the housing market's going to go down, and it will go down. Everything, it goes up and down a lot. You just don't want to sell on the downs, right? So yeah, you might end up buying, maybe you're buying a little high right now, but life is bringing to that point and you want to catch it while the interest rates are low. If it did go down next week, right after you closed on the house, it's going to come back up and then go past that. So as long as you're willing, just say it's like, if you're willing to commit, if you're going to say, like, you know what, we're going to be here in a normal market 3 to 5 years, you're going to at least break even when you leave. Right now in Seattle, like, you don't even need 3 years to break even, to be honest. It's kind of insane, but market'll change, and by the time you're listening to this, maybe in 2027, things could be different. I don't know. I don't have my time machine, so I can't tell you. But things keep going up. Interest rates are low. There's a lot of great reasons why now is a good time to buy, despite the prices. I know the prices seem really high in a lot of the cities, and probably where you're listening to listen to it from, but it's not a bad time. If you can successfully predict all the bad times of real estate, one, that person should be working for CNBC and CNN. They should be working for everybody, because they are a prodigy that nobody else has been able to figure out, but they can. Okay. So still there. And that's it. That's 10. That's 10 myths about home buying that are keeping 10 myths that are keeping you from buying a home. That's it. That's my program. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to this edition of You're Buying a Home with Silas Lindenstein. And again, if you are in the Seattle, Washington area, and I do have openings to take clients, so email me at silas@silasgetsreal.com. Also, if you just want a referral to an agent in your area, again, email me at silas@silasgetsreal.com. And again, if you've learned anything today, if I've changed your perspective or anything about home buying, please go to the Apple Podcasts site and leave a 5-star review. Really appreciate it. And also remember to check out my other podcast, blackandahalf.com, with me and Samantha Run. Find that at blackandahalf.com. And that's it. That's it. I'm out of here. You get on the computer, email me, go find the house, go buy the house, and then fall in love with the house. Happy home buying.